This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT HD, WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor. On call every Saturday afternoon at 5. This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Every so often, we hear a song, a speech, or an advertisement that becomes iconic. I didn't have to reach too far back in my own memory to come up with today's show title, The Heartbreak of Psoriasis, words which I recall from a TV commercial many years ago. Psoriasis is a common chronic inflammatory skin disease that can present in a variety of ways. Today we'll learn what psoriasis looks like, its many forms, and how we diagnose and treat it. We welcome the return of Dr. Bruce Brode, one of our favorite guests, who's an extraordinary dermatologist and teacher, Dr. Bruce Brode, clinical professor of dermatology, associate dean at the Perelman School of Medicine at the University of Penn, and the director of the Contact Dermatitis Clinic at Penn Medicine. Welcome, Bruce. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Marianne. It's great to be back on the show again, and I look forward to our conversation today.
Well, thanks, Bruce. So let's start with the appearance of psoriasis, because I often wonder how often people don't recognize the classic lesions. And we want to emphasize, as you so beautifully do, it's not leprosy. It's not contagious.
No, I mean, psoriasis is it's a chronic disease. It's fairly common. It's an inflammatory disease, a disease that involves the immune system. And typically, diagnosing psoriasis for dermatologists, board-certified dermatologists, it's not a diagnostic dilemma. But some presentations can be challenging. So in its classic, typical form, psoriasis presents as raised, red, but I'm going to talk about that. So elevated patches, typically circular in nature. They can be almost like different shapes, almost geographic shapes. And in the classic sense, they are covered by sort of a very white, very, very prominent silvery type of scale. Common areas that they occur include the scalp, particularly the back of the scalp, but anywhere on the scalp is fair game. The elbows, the knees, so kind of areas of pressure. And another common area is the lower back. It's called the presacral region. But it can also involve other areas. The palms, think about that, having like a flaky, scaly condition that's red and angry on your palms. We use our hands for everything. It can be on the feet. It can involve the nails. It can involve genital areas, and it can involve body fold areas. Now, I said in the classic sense, you know, we typically recognize it as red, scaly patches, but you know, people have different skin tones, so that sometimes the redness, especially in patients with darker skin tones, it's not as easily recognized. The patches can be dark, they can be purplish. Sometimes you can't appreciate the redness, but you can still see that elevation as well.
And I know I had a patient who started playing ice hockey in later years who didn't have psoriasis, but it seemed to, the onset came, you know, in his 30s. And the part where the ice skate rubbed on his shins, right above his ankles, psoriasis developed there. Not because of, but sometimes psoriasis shows up in areas of trauma, yes?
Yes, no, psoriasis is aggravated by trauma. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it may be one of the reasons why we see it commonly kind of on the elbows and knees and areas like that. So, yeah, rubbing is definitely an aggravating factor as well. And that's tough, too, because psoriasis has different symptoms. I mean, it can itch. And what happens when our skin itches? We scratch it. And so that's the worst thing you can do, of course, because that's trauma. And that sort of signals to the skin, hey, I'm being traumatized. It creates more inflammation and the psoriasis actually worsens.
And truthfully, personally, I think an itch is worse than a pain. Sometimes there's no escape. And then, as you say, when we scratch, we release histamine. People understand antihistamine makes you stop with an itchy nose or runny nose. But histamine is the king that causes itching. And when you scratch, it releases more histamine. And as you say, it just makes the cycle continue. So when we look at the presenting or the obvious visuals, as you say, it's so classic in appearance. You look at it and say, boom, psoriasis. Does it present differently in children than it does in adults?
Well, you bring up a great point, because when does psoriasis occur? I mean, we think it has a bimodal peak, so it tends to occur in young adults, in people in their 20s and 30s, and then very commonly has a second peak in sort of that middle age, 50 and 60 category, but it also can occur in children. One of the classic presentations in children is after an infection. So strep, which, you know, is really common in children. In most children who get strep, who get a strep throat, they're not going to develop psoriasis. But in a small subset of children, and we think there's a genetic predisposition, having a strep infection can trigger a type of psoriasis that we call guttate, G-U-T-T-A-T-E. For those who like spelling, it actually means like raindrop or teardrop. So we'll see kids that present after a strep throat with psoriasis all over their body. Little like round rain, guttate means drop-like, so little like drop-like, and it's very widespread. And obviously very disconcerting, not only to the children, but also to the parents when this occurs. Children can also get it, and it can be like very young children, infants and toddlers, not commonly, but they can get it in the diaper area. And of course, parents immediately think, well, this is a diaper rash. And in those children, we actually think the trauma aspect is the irritation that they get, as if they were getting a diaper rash from, you know, all the activity, the normal biologic functions that go on under the diaper. So, you know, most diaper rash doesn't turn into psoriasis, but in, you know, those smaller subset of kids who are prone, even as infants, it can show up and it can kind of look like a diaper rash. But of course, it's treated different.
And I guess it can happen anywhere where skin areas rub together, maybe between the breasts or between fingers, or I guess toes, maybe between the that gluteal cleft, polite for where your two cheeks.
It's a very common area, and the gluteal cleft, we all have them, so okay to talk about it. But yeah, psoriasis can occur, and then actually where it can become challenging to diagnose when it occurs in the fold area, so under the arms, under the breasts, body, you know, under the belly, in the groin region. And there's a name for that type of psoriasis. It's called inverse psoriasis because it's sort of occurring, you know, not in the outward areas, like like the arms and the legs and the scalp, but more inversely. And that psoriasis sometimes is not as easily recognized. I think dermatologists are really good at recognizing that. And the reason is, if you remember what I mentioned initially, classically it has like lots of thick silvery scale, but when it occurs in those moist areas, and we think maybe some of the trauma part is that rubbing, we don't see the scale. One of the hallmarks, it's just a thinner red, you know, red, or in darker skin folks, it might look like a dark patch, but it has really sharp borders. Like you can draw a line very neatly around it, where it's occurring in those fold areas.
And knowing that, again, you bring up a really important point for listeners to learn. Eczema is a rash that can come with people who have asthma or allergies, wouldn't you say? And that usually occurs on the innie surface. When you bend your arm, it's on the inside of your elbow, that or under the axilla. But as psoriasis loves the outside of your elbow, your knee, not where your knee bends in the back, but in the front. And so it could be confusing if somebody gets a redness under their breasts or in a tucked in area. And I think people should know that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it can be confusing. And there are some folks who actually have a little bit of eczema and a little bit of psoriasis. And it can be difficult sometimes to distinguish between the two. I will say that mercifully, psoriasis less commonly involves the face. That's really important because, you know, skin disease, it's not just about the itch, burn, and the pain. And we'll talk about other aspects, I think, too. But it's the outward appearance. And psoriasis patients, you know, oftentimes it really impacts their life. But the face can be a place where psoriasis presents. And that's really challenging in so many ways for individuals. It also can affect the nails. And so the nails can be a clue to helping us distinguish between, say, psoriasis and the other thousands of skin conditions that can be red and scaly. We look for changes in the nails, like we call them nail pits. It almost looks like somebody took like a little like chisel tool and put a little pit in the nail. We look for the nail separating from the underlying nail bed. That causes what we call oil spot like appearance. It almost like has the appearance like there's an oil stain under the nail. Those can be really clues to helping us diagnose psoriasis. Sometimes dermatologists, we don't get too worried about having to take a small sample of skin. It's really easy doing a skin biopsy. Sometimes we will do that to help us distinguish between psoriasis and other skin diseases. It's really quick and easy, but there's very characteristic changes that we see in the skin under the microscope doing a biopsy. And so we use visual cues. We use clinical clues, like we look at how it appears, but we look at the nails. And a great place for a clue is, as you said earlier, between the butt cheeks. It's a really common place for psoriasis to occur. And when we're sort of in that conundrum, like, is it psoriasis or not? We'll often tell patients, politely, of course, hey, you know, can we see that area on your lower gluteal? And if we see that well-defined patch, it's almost a ringer that this is psoriasis.
Has to be so uncomfortable. We have about a minute left. So it's a visual diagnosis. You see it. You have thousands of images in your own mind. And when you see it, it's usually pretty classic. And in an unusual presentation to a layperson, you say, yeah, I think that rash under your breast is not fungal from sweating. It's psoriasis. But if you do have to do a biopsy, it's pretty benign, the process, yes?
So easy, really easy.
Good.
Yeah,
good.
You use a little local anesthetic in the office take a pencil eraser piece of skin, heals really quickly. Obviously, try to do it in an area that's less visible. And so it's just one of the tools we use to to help confirm that diagnosis, because it's really important. I think it really sets the stage for a good treatment pathway, builds confidence with the patient that we know what this is and we know how to treat it.
Got to know your enemy to know what ammunition. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, more on the heartbreak of psoriasis with Dr. Bruce Brode.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about psoriasis, which is not so uncommon. Our guest is Dr. Bruce Brode, dermatologist from University of Pennsylvania. Bruce, we were talking about the visuals. What does psoriasis look like? But since it really is a representation of systemic inflammation, it might not just affect skin. As you were starting to tell us, it can affect the nails. Classic sign, you see pitting, like somebody's taken a drill bit and just hit your nail. Or it can have, I think you were saying that it's the oil sign. Like somebody poured some, the oil drop sign, I guess. It looks like new motor oil under your skin. Tell us about the nail findings, if you would.
Yeah, no, the psoriasis. So you're exactly right. It's psoriasis is more than skin deep. It's what we call a systemic disease. It's a disease of the immune system, and the skin is a very active immune organ. So psoriasis impacts the skin, but it also impacts the entire body in general. And we can talk about that a little more, but it's really a condition of inflammation. And we're fortunate because, and I think it's one of the reasons I feel fortunate to be a dermatologist, because the skin, it's forgiving. Somebody could have psoriasis all over their body, and it's really a devastating impact. As you said, the heartbreak on the quality of their life. But with treatment, it can go away. But when it impacts other areas, they heal more slowly. And it can impact the nail. The psoriasis can directly involve the area right under the nail and cause the nail to lift up from where it's attached to the skin beneath it. It's called the nail bed. And when that happens, the nail doesn't look so nice. You see kind of like almost a, like whitish changes under there. And then the psoriasis also can give the appearance of like a yellow brownish, almost like an oil stain, like you'd see on your garage with the old leaky engine, where it creates a little round spot underneath the nail as well. And then in some of the most severe forms of psoriasis, something called pustular psoriasis, which can is fortunately rare and can be both localized, which is no fun at all, but also generalized, which is life-threatening. But in pustular psoriasis, if that affects the nail, it almost like destroys it.
Oh.
The nail kind of just almost blows up. Now, nails can recover too, fortunately, with treatment as well. And psoriasis affects the entire being. So it has systemic, really important systemic implications as well.
But as is always the case when I chat with you, I learned so much good information. When a person has nail involvement, that might be the first sign that they have psoriasis. It might be the only sign. And that sounds the alarm to contact rheumatology, the joint doctors, because nail involvement can represent arthritis or joint involvement in the near or distant future. That joints can get destroyed. That's irreversible. Skin is reversible. But take it as a flag to say, okay, my nails are involved. Let's get rheumatology on board because you want to treat that early so the person doesn't become crippled, yes?
It's such an important point. And yes, nail changes, nail pitting to pus is a marker for what's called psoriatic arthritis. So psoriasis doesn't just affect the skin, but the most common, what we call comorbidity. So sort of, a disease that goes along with another disease very commonly is psoriatic arthritis. And we think that most of the time psoriatic arthritis is preceded by psoriasis, usually by a few years, and it can be insidious. These are patients who present with oftentimes pain, stiffness in the joints, but sometimes it's just fatigue. And so it's really important. And we know, like all good doctors, are doctors who are never comfortable. So, you know, if we have a psoriasis patient, we've had that patient for several years, and we're treating their skin, one of the things that is really important to do at every visit is ask the patient about their joints. We even sometimes use little scoring questionnaire devices to assess them for psoriatic arthritis, but questions that really are directed to: does the patient have pain in their joints? Do they have stiffness, especially in the morning? It doesn't go away so quickly. But even fatigue, and we think a significant number of patients, especially with more severe psoriasis or with involvement of nails as a marker, have psoriatic arthritis, and it's progressive. And unlike the skin, which can be really involved all over and recover, the joints don't necessarily recover, and that can lead to, you know, trouble with movement throughout life, you know, joint replacements and those type of things, which really rise up the chain of, you know, really impacting somebody's ability to function as a normal person.
And you mentioned, Bruce, that sometimes it can affect the palms and soles. I can't imagine trying to walk or use your hands in a busy fashion. That has to be so painful and debilitating for it to involve the soles of your feet.
I mean, if I'll talk a little bit about my personal story, but if I had psoriasis on my palms, for instance, and I do have a little bit of psoriasis, fortunately it's more mild on my knee, but psoriasis on my palms as a dermatologist where I work with my hands, I would be disabled, because, And it's embarrassing too. Patient, the hands are, you know, we see the hands all the time. We need them to function. So yeah, it can really impact the normal activities of work and play and the social aspects of our life. The feet the same. We're, you know, wearing shoes over big patches of psoriasis, you know, cause itching and burning and bleeding, and it can be so uncomfortable.
And sometimes fissures, like those deep crevices in somebody, like you see people that use their hands in labor, and they get calluses and those, and they get cracks, or people even that get cracks in their skin in the wintertime. That has to be so brutally painful for people. So we're talking about the whole of psoriasis. It can represent total body inflammation. It's always interesting to me, whether it's COVID or psoriasis or lupus or whatever it is that involves the immune system attacking you, your immune system saying, I don't like you. How does it decide to hit joints or skin? How does it make, I guess there are receptors that are open to saying, okay, beat me up. But when we think about it, that could be why psoriasis can sometimes bump the risk or be associated with more heart disease, high blood pressure. We talked about arthritis, even obesity. Obesity, we think, leads to inflammation. Is it hand in hand? What say you about that systemic effect?
Yeah, no, the other comorbidities that I think, as you touched upon, that are really important to talk about are, you know, sometimes it's a chicken or egg thing. We, you know, the classic psoriasis patient tends to have a higher BMI, although not necessarily, but psoriasis, we think, because of the inflammation, is a trigger for an increased risk of cardiovascular disease and major cardiovascular events. And so patients with psoriasis have potentially higher risk for heart attacks and strokes, pretty serious stuff. Now, mostly that concern is patients who have severe psoriasis. But mm-hmm. if you look at like the, you know, the relative risk, it's pretty scary. It's pretty high. I mean, as much as like 47% higher. Now, if for people that have severe psoriasis, don't necessarily panic, because over a 1 year, you know, if your risk of getting a major cardiac event is say 7% over the next 10 years, and it goes up, you know, 47 times, your risk is still relatively low. But if you look at it year after year after year, so somebody develops psoriasis in their 40s and 50s, over time, that risk is really much higher. We think it's also a trigger for metabolic syndrome, a trigger for type 2 diabetes. And I think the important aspect of that is, you know, it's not just a disease of the skin. We talked about the joints, but I think psoriasis is really a model of a disease that when it occurs, it really provides the necessity and the opportunity to really address the entire health needs of that person. So they should be screened. They should have their blood pressure checked. They should have their lipids checked. They should have their hemoglobin A1C checked. They should always be checking in about their nutrition, their diet, their BMI. Those things are really important because of that increased risk. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes some people also loosely connect it with inflammatory bowel disease, which we know has its own joint manifestations. And that's the Crohn's disease, also colitis. Maybe there's a link there as well. So, Bruce, you were very generous to share that you are a psoriasis patient yourself. And how did you find that? You were at work one day and you stumbled over it. And how does family history play a role in this?
Yes. Thanks for asking that question. So, yeah, here I am, a dermatologist, right? We're not supposed to actually develop the diseases that we treat.
Anything. We're not supposed to get anything.
Yeah, I was in the middle of a busy, you know, day seeing patients, I think midway through the day, and I felt my right knee itching, and I'm like, what's that about? I reached down, and immediately I felt an elevated patch underneath my clothes, and I knew, like, in 1 second that I had psoriasis, and, you know, it's devastating. Mine is localized, it itches like crazy at times, and I treat it, but, you know, so I saw it, and I looked at my knee, I knew right away. But of course, you know, it's psoriasis has a very strong genetic linkage. About a third of patients have a family history of psoriasis.
Cool. Wow.
Yeah, it's high. So I asked my mom, does anybody in the family have psoriasis, Mom? And she said, no, you know, don't look at me. We didn't, you know, it doesn't come from us. Anyway, a couple years later, a cousin from the South called me up, knowing I'm a dermatologist, and said, hey, I have psoriasis. Can you help me out with, who's a great dermatologist down here and some treatments? So I knew the light bulb went on. I did have a family history.
Wow. And it's so important. You know, my poor father-in-law, he was such a pillar of strength. He lived to be 92 and worked out 5 days a week, something, walking, cycling, figure skated every Thursday night till he was 72. Just a remarkable. And he would sit at the dinner table and rub his back on the chair. And he really was plagued with psoriasis, but he never talked about it. You just saw him scratch and keep going. But I guess if inflammation is part of the story, and we're going to talk about treatments in the next segment, but if we say obesity, we think obesity leads to inflammation that bumps the risk for, say, breast cancer. If inflammation is associated with obesity, is it the chicken or the egg? But other factors we can control are smoking can cause inflammation. You're inhaling inflammatory junk, too much alcohol, Are there certain medicines that are linked with maybe triggering psoriasis?
Yes, so it's a great question. And again, I like what you're saying, because it really is a model of a disease that really ties into overall health. So smoking is a trigger factor of inflammation. Alcohol as well doesn't mean you can't have a glass of wine. We're talking about, more excessive alcohol. But yeah, medications can as well. I mean, one of the more and illnesses as well. We talked about strep, but lithium, which is used as a behavioral health treatment, can be a strong trigger factor of psoriasis, and that makes it challenging. Less evidence-based are some of the blood pressure medic. It doesn't mean you shouldn't take your blood pressure medicine.
Right.
Beta blockers, we think, can be a little bit of a trigger factor for psoriasis. Some of the medications that we use to treat autoimmune diseases like lupus can be a trigger factor for psoriasis as well. Infection, strep, certain viral infections as well, can aggravate psoriasis. So it can make it challenging in patients, who need those medications. We also see some patients who have psoriasis during pregnancy can flare during pregnancy as well. And of course, that's, the last interval of time that you want to have to deal with, a worsening of a chronic skin condition. And then it creates challenges in terms of treatments as well. Pregnant folks don't like to take extraneous medications.
No. I'd like to hear more about that after the break. Stay with us to hear about this week's Real Champion. For your Real Champion, I call this segment Leslie's Place. Friends, I am a certified dog lover. We grew up with doggies in our home, and for 25 years, we've had beagles for our own children. One, two, and for several years, three Snoopies at the same time. And after a long day at work, nothing says love like three tails wagging in unison when I'd pull into the driveway. Well, here's the story of two other pet lovers, Karen and Mark, who have devoted their entire lives to caring for animals. Dr. Karen Sørenmo came from Norway as a young veterinarian to study oncology or cancer care at the University of Penn School of Veterinary Medicine. At Penn, she met her future husband, Mark Cofone. After residency, Karen stayed at Penn as the director of oncology for many years. Mark became a general veterinarian and practiced in a specialty hospital in Delaware. When Karen first came to America, she met a young woman coming from Ireland to also train at Penn. They became roommates and best friends. Like Karen, Leslie spent her entire career at Penn, where she became a force among students and fellow veterinarians, with countless awards from Penn and even national veterinary medicine societies. She founded intensive care for cats and dogs at Penn and played a major role in developing this specialty nationally. Sadly, Leslie lost her own battle with breast cancer at the young age of 51, but she's still recognized for her lasting contributions. When it was time to retire, Karen and Mark decided to devote their skills and experience to a project that would honor the life and work of their dear friend and colleague, Leslie King, while offering a home to shelter dogs in need of cancer care. Leslie's Place, established in 2021 to advance clinical and basic research that would benefit both dogs and women with breast cancer. Leslie's Place accepts homeless dogs with mammary tumors. A dog has to be in foster care for at least 2 weeks to avoid any infection from other dogs in a shelter setting. The foster family functions as the owner, brings the dog for surgery, and the pet stays for one night. The dog goes home with pain meds, then returns for an incision check 2 weeks later. The rescue center can put the dog up for adoption, but the adoption family knows the dog has to be followed for 2 years. And you guessed it, in 9 out of 10 cases, the foster family falls in love and adopts the needy doggy. This work is spectacular. Number one, a very small number of human breast cancers have a BRCA mutation or some other genetic marker. Most of our breast cancers occur spontaneously without any positive blood test. Dog tumors are also spontaneous. You see, in the lab, Breast cancer is induced or artificially created in mice, but dogs develop spontaneous breast cancer. So the hope is to learn more from studying cancer in dogs, which is more like human breast cancer. Also, dogs can develop multiple breast tumors at once, and about 50% are benign. So if you biopsy samples from multiple tumors in one dog, you can see the progression from benign to irregular to cancer cells, providing potential information about identifying, assessing risk, and designing treatments. Plus, we all know someone who's been affected by breast cancer. So to honor the loved one, you can help advance research that will benefit women and dogs with breast cancer while helping a homeless dog become cancer-free and find a home. Karen and Mark donate all their medical and surgical treatments. Their foundation, Leslie's Place, raises money for the expenses in the clinic. And like true champions, they share the limelight with two other people. First, at the University of Florida in Gainesville, their veterinary colleague, Dr. Kylie Graham, is a driving force behind the work in the lab that leads to a better understanding of breast cancer in humans through her work with dogs. Mark and Karen also praise the generosity of Dr. Ann Jeglum, a veterinary cancer specialist in Westchester, who invites them to do their work in her animal hospital at a nonprofit expense level. Dr. Jeglum is a pioneer herself in the field of veterinary cancer care and was one of Karen's teachers at Penn. She'll be retiring soon, so if there's a veterinarian out there listening willing to share space, please contact Karen and Mark at lesliesplace.org. Karen and Mark have been overwhelmed by the kindness of people toward these sweet dogs. While I'm incredibly impressed by their dedication to finding a cure for breast cancer in honor of their friend and colleague and their devotion for caring for all God's beautiful creatures. We salute you, Dr. Karen Sorrenmo, Dr. Mark Caffone, along with their colleague Dr. Kylie Graham at the University of Florida, and Dr. Ann Jeglum at the Veterinary Oncology Services and Research Center in Westchester. You're real champions. Visit the website lesliesplace.org. That's L-E-S-L-E-Y-S place.org. Foster a dog. Send a donation to help fight breast cancer.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to our final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about the appearance, the behavior, and all the different manifestations of psoriasis. Bruce, let's talk about treatments, because I know there's a spectrum from topical, injections, light therapy. Let's talk about what's available.
Yeah, absolutely. So, one, we've come a long way. I can remember when I was a resident several decades ago, the way we used to treat psoriasis patients, and it's very different from how we treat patients now. So we used to have what was called a psoriasis daycare center. And as a resident, we would be in charge of rounding on those patients. They would come in. There would always be about 10 patients at a time. They literally would come in and spend every day for about 3 weeks, and this is the treatment. Their bodies would be painted with thick tar-based ointments that smelled, you could smell it a mile away, and then they would get, baths and moisturizers, and then they would go into phototherapy, which we still use today, and it's a great treatment. But they would have to completely abandon their life, right? People work, they have families, and come in, and it worked pretty well. And we've come a long way now. We have treatments geared towards more localized disease. We have treatments geared towards more widespread disease. We have topical therapies, and some of the treatments also address some of the, what we talked about, the comorbidities, the joint disease as well. And I think it's almost like a ladder approach. So if somebody has localized disease, like I'm an example of that, you know, the mainstay of therapy is, or common therapy is, to use topical cortisones. We generally use stronger cortisones on those areas, but we've come a long way since then, because cortisones aren't designed to be used every day, day in and day out, and especially in body fold areas, they can cause stretch marks. So we've seen an explosion of topical therapies that can be used more chronically. We started years ago with something that was almost a derivative of vitamin D, analog called calcipotriene. Today we have newer therapies that are topical. They're creams, they're ointments that you can rub on the skin to help keep more localized psoriasis under control, and they work through different mechanisms. Sometimes we even use derivatives of topical vitamin A as well. That can be a little bit irritating. But I will say, the challenge with topical therapy is it's really hard to get patients to stick to using it day in and day out. It's hard to get patients to take a pill every day, let alone topical therapy. So that's challenging. Sometimes we can do things in the office too. We can inject. It sounds barbaric, but it's not too bad because we use teeny tiny needles. Sometimes we inject cortisone right into the patches, and that gives relief sometimes for weeks or months. And sometimes we can use very localized laser light therapy to small patches. And that's great because it doesn't involve like rubbing anything on. It's done in the office. Patients have to go a few times a week, but that's effective as well. So that's sort of the spectrum for topical. And then we get into sort of the treatments for more widespread. One of my favorites is phototherapy. And, you know, some people might think, Yes, sun helps psoriasis, UV light. Now, dermatologists, we're constantly encouraging people to avoid the sun and protect from the sun, and we do that all the time. But we use a very filtered form of ultraviolet light. It's called narrowband UVB. It's been around for decades now, and it's a really great treatment for psoriasis that's more widespread. Problem is, if somebody has psoriatic arthritis, it won't treat that. It's a great therapy for patients who don't sort of want to take medications, patients who are pregnant as well. And nowadays, there's some barriers, but patients can actually, once they learn how to use it and feel comfortable in the office, that's one of the biggest barriers because they have to come a couple times a week for a while. There's home units now as well. It's not for everybody, and there's always the insurance barriers of covering those units. But then they have it in their house, and they can use it with direction. Dermatologists, you know, train and teach them and supervise, but it's great. And then our tool chest is so deep these days with systemic therapies. We used to use internal drugs that had some toxicities, things like methotrexate. Nowadays, we have an array of what we call biologics. There's about 15 out there now in the market, and they work at different levels of the immune system. What we always have attention and concerns about side effects. The safety of biologics is generally good. 100%? No. But the safety is generally good. One of the biggest challenges is the cost. They're costly medications, so it can be challenging for patients who don't have insurance. But the biologics work at different levels. Some of them can be administered at home. Patients actually inject medication on the order of every 2 weeks, every month, every 8 weeks, to every 3 months. So there's different doses. Dosing schedules. So some of these medications work for months at a time, and they can also help the arthritic component of the psoriasis as well. And then Yes.
I would think so.
And then at a higher level, there's oral medications as well. There's a few different types of oral medications that can treat psoriasis nowadays. One is called apremilast. It tends to not impact the immune system overall as much. And then there are medications that are called JAK, for the type of receptor they inhibit, inhibitors, or TYK2 inhibitors as well. They work kind of higher upstream in the immune system. There are potential side effects. The safety is not bad. And these are designed for patients, in the more moderate to severe spectrum. But I feel like nowadays I can look at any patient that comes into my office with psoriasis and with confidence say to them, I'm here for you. I'm going to work with you. And we have the tools and we'll work together to find the best path to be able to control their psoriasis very, very well.
Well, Bruce, I can say from listening to you and knowing your work, you must go home and feel very exhausted because you put your whole self into taking care of patients. We're going to talk about that in a minute because you really do look at the whole person, their mental health and well-being. But I want to review a couple of things you said or just interject when I'm listening. I remember hearing about the tar baths as a medical student, and I used to think, holy Toledo, how tough is that? You know, you hope that the tar isn't followed by feathers. That's the only image I had from old movies, But so the most common therapy, just to get things started under control, is topical steroids. So steroids is the strongest med we can use to fight inflammation. But listeners, please, if there's a little tube of topical or what you put on, rub on your skin, topical steroids, don't use it. Don't take some your brother's or somebody else's because it can cause atrophy of your skin. Any therapy, even if you can grab it over the counter, see a doctor, be monitored by a doctor. My other question for you, Bruce, you already answered, was when I heard about UV light, I thought, oh my gosh, we all know, especially you as a dermatologist, that ultraviolet rays can cause skin cancer, but yours is filtered. So that answer is there. It doesn't bump your risk for skin cancer, right? The UV light therapy?
No. We used to, I think before narrowband UVB was widely available, and admittedly, even dermatologists would sort of allow their patients to go to the tanning booths because, you do what you need to do to treat the patients. But really, that's not a good option. That's a different type of light. It's what we call broadband UVA light. And you need a lot of it to impact psoriasis. And the problem with that, with the tanning booths, is that light also causes, and there's evidence, strong cancer, yes, including melanoma. So we're lucky because narrowband UVB, and there's been some recent studies, it's done in an office and you can get home units. The risk of skin cancer over people who don't get that therapy, almost no difference at all. It's actually really, really safe. It's very powerful. Yeah. It has to be done correctly. Right. Patients need to know how to incrementally dose themselves, and it's done in dermatology offices, but great form of therapy.
But that's what people need to hear. It's all positive. It's not going to bump your risk for skin cancer. Go get the help of an experienced dermatologist. And so I'm thinking if you put tar on somebody, you're trying to trap moisture, right, to help dry up those lesions. So is it wise to, whatever therapy you're being used, should patients keep that skin from getting too dry, like with moisturizing creams and ointments, or is that a good or bad thing?
It's a great question. It's never a bad thing to keep the skin moisturized and help to soften the scales. It helps in many respects. One, it can reduce some of the symptoms of itch, burn, and pain because the skin's not so dry and flaking and cracked. Two, it can help things like light therapy work better. It penetrates better as well. And thirdly, it's a great vehicle to actually drive in some of the medications. So for instance, in the scalp, right? Think about, you know, thick, scaly, flaky scalp, which can be really embarrassing because of the psoriasis in there. We use oils sometimes, and some of those oils are just oil alone, peanut oil or mineral oil, but sometimes we use them with the medications, and it really enhances the penetration of those medications and helps get rid of some of that embarrassing flaky scale for patients.
Interesting. Let's take a little break, and when we come back, our wrap up for the week.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Welcome back to your Radio Doctor. Many, many thanks to Dr. Bruce Brode from Penn Dermatology. We always learn so much from you, Bruce. And today we had a really in-depth conversation about psoriasis, what it can look like, other parts of the body that can be affected, especially the joints. Catch it early, because once it continues and can be crippling, it's not reversible. Whereas the skin lesions, you have a treasure chest of therapies. But we want people to know, this is not leprosy. It's not contagious. If you're near somebody, it doesn't mean you're going to get it. And what it looks like. Watch your fingernails for pitting or color changes or even little tiny hemorrhages, because it could signal that your joints can be involved. And learn your family history. Fascinating to me that one in three, about 30% of people, have a family history. Tell us what your big message is, though, that you look at the whole person, because it can affect their mental health and their well-being.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I mean, as a dermatologist, I think I'm very sensitive to the fact that we treat really serious skin diseases. But skin disease is, you know, it has sort of its own unique position, because it's not just an illness that makes us sick and can shorten our life and lead to other problems. But it has a huge social aspect as well, because we can see it. I mean, and, you know, I experience this as well. I have a little bit of psoriasis, but not as much as many of my patients. And it really impacts people in every way. You know, sometimes if it's on your knees, right, and it's a hot summer day and you might want to go to a barbecue, but, you know, you're going to be the person that's not wearing shorts, because because people might look at you funny. They might think you're contagious. And so it has a huge social aspect, and it can affect the mental health and well-being of patients. I remember I was amazed when early on in practice, I had a patient come to me with psoriasis all over, a gentleman on his trunk. Picture these large patches, arms and legs. And, you know, I was like, you know, eager and young. And I was like, okay, you know, I can help this person. And I sat down in the room, and I put my hands on the patient's arms where he had psoriasis. And then he was startled. He looked up at me and he said, "Doctor, what you're, you know, don't want to do that. Nobody ever touches me." I said, "Sir, you're not contagious. There's nothing contagious about this." And he said, "You're the first doctor that's ever, like, put their hands on me and isn't afraid of me. There's nothing to be afraid of. It's not contagious." Like, way back in biblical times, we think some of the people with psoriasis were thought to be lepers and placed on leper colonies. Those days should be long gone. We know a lot of patients are undertreated with psoriasis, and what in this country that have it, that live with it. And, you know, we know that there's, you know, many reasons why that is. Maybe they're embarrassed. Maybe they don't know that dermatologists are available and can treat it. Maybe they're afraid of some of the treatments, and that's where we can help and intervene. And we know, you know, our health system, newsflash, has a lot of broken parts in it. And sometimes it's just a question about, you know, knowing how to access the system, knowing how to access a dermatologist. But I encourage them. And know that it's a disease of not just the skin, although that's hugely important and really can impact people's health and lead to depression even more than skin disease. But it's a disease that impacts them inside as well. And so treatment's really important.
So well said. As always, Bruce, the skin is the window to the soul. My favorite chapter in our giant internal medicine textbook was that the external manifestations of internal disease right there on the surface. So thank you for enlightening us about psoriasis. We love you. I can't wait to have you come back again. Thank you, Dr. Bruce Brode, extraordinary dermatologist from University of Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Marianne.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday at 5 p.m. here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to this show again on Audacy.com, AUDACY.com, or visit our website, yourradiodoctor.net. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross, for their continued support. Visit Helio.com, HEALIO.com, the medical information platform with the most current medical and health news. So many helpful articles on the treatments for psoriasis, possible effects of diet, and considerations for treating psoriasis in patients with skin of color. Take another listen to your Real Champion from today. Learn more about the great research at Leslie's Place that may help with breast cancer in women and dogs, and maybe you'll think about fostering one of these little doggies who needs a home. Leslie'sPlace.org. Next week, we welcome the return of our friend, Dr. Julie Cardos, pediatrician from Children's Hospital Philadelphia, who will explain the importance for teens to have an annual visit with a pediatrician to check for medical problems, but also screen for risky behaviors. We continue to gain listeners. Please invite family and friends to tune in to Your Radio Doctor. Follow us on social media. Send questions or topics you'd like us to discuss. Share the story of a real champion. Write to info@yourradiodoctor.net. Friends, this is a pivotal time in the history of our nation and our world. More than ever, please remember to pray for peace in our world, in our country, in our families, and each of our own hearts. This is Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Audacy. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, police officers, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.